touch Krishna. When? What time? Tomorrow's good day. Double winner. That's why they call it Good Friday. Must be. It's hard to understand why they call it Good Friday. You know? You would think it was the most awful Friday. Yeah?
Because I think Christ made the sacrifice.
I can see how Easter Sunday is a good Sunday, but Good Friday, it's hard for me to accept.
Yeah.
I mean, from your point of view, it was good. From his point of view, after all, you're a servant. I mean, that's the way I look at it. It doesn't quite make sense, but there must be some reason like that. Doesn't quite add up for me, though. Such a painful. Even.
But it was his choice, I guess.
But from the point of view of the devotee, think of it as a painful time, I would imagine. But I guess it's just a different point of view from the Christian point of view. And to think of him having to go through that. The exalted Vaishnava, lover of God.
But his faith is so strong. God's.
That's from his point of view, but from the devotee point of view, incredibly painful. That's what I would think. Janajanasalakaya Chaksu Samiritan Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Maravistam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Sayam Pagadamayam Dadati Sarapanantikam. So in this ninth chapter of the sixth canto of the Bhagavatam, the demigods have prayed to the Lord in a sakam fashion. Sakam means with desires. They were not akam. Akam means without any material desires, but looking for the Lord's pleasure. So, in Prabhupada's purports, even though the demigods glorified the Lord, and then they said, although you know everything, still, even though you know our difficulties, still we're going to ask you for something. Please incarnate immediately to protect us from this demon Vritrasura who is cracking our hearts out of fear of him. So in Prabhupada's purports, he explains very much, this isn't actually pure devotional service, this is sakam bhakti. And then when the Lord replies to the prayers of the demigods, he explains that just that fact, that one who is pure, but for one whom the Lord is pleased with, who is exclusively fixed, his consciousness is exclusively fixed on the Lord, he doesn't ask for anything. But he does ask for something. He doesn't ask for anything for himself, but he asks for the opportunity to engage in devotional service. Again, this is Bhagavad Dharma. This is actually true religion. This is the religion of the jiva in his pleasing of the Lord, that is all that is in his consciousness. He wants to please the Lord. That is pure devotional service. So if one asks for anything else or desires for anything else, the Lord says, is considered foolish. And a master who awards them their materialistic desires is also considered foolish. So in Prabhupada's purport to that verse, as we read yesterday, he explained that, he quoted from Chaitanya Charitamrita, saying that when the Lord is actually pleased with something, rather than fulfilling his material desires, he takes away his material situation and forces him into a position of complete dependence upon the Lord, when he has no other choice. So then the devotee turns to the Lord and says, okay, I am yours. So that, when Krishna takes everything away, that is like Krishna gently tapping one on the shoulder and saying, come, you come with me now. Enough of all this, you come with me. That is Krishna's loving affection to the devotee. But yet he has other ways of dealing with his devotees as well. That is, in some senses, the quick, more painful way, like the lancing of a boil, immediately, very quickly. It's so painful, but immediately it's done with. But there's other ways where the Lord fulfills the desires, but gradually purifies as well. So text 50, or after text 50, the Lord will actually fulfill, tell the demigods how their desires for protection will be fulfilled. But in text 50, a pure devotee who is fully accomplished in the science of devotional service will never instruct a foolish person to engage in fruitive activities for material enjoyment, not to speak of helping him in such activities. Such a devotee is like an experienced physician who never encourages a patient to eat food injurious to his health, even if the patient desires it. Prabhupada once told the story of how, when he was in his household days, he was doing something in his house, and he heard one of his neighbors, the mother, beating one of the children with her shoes, which is considered a very heavy thing. She was so angry. So he sent over his servant to find out what had happened, what the boy had done to cause the mother so much anger. And the servant came back with the story that the lady had two sons. There was a younger boy who had typhoid. And in typhoid, you have a very, very high fever. And your diet is so restricted, you can't eat certain things. Otherwise, it could mean your death. So serious. So the young boy had asked his older brother, please, I want some sweets. You get me some sweets. So the restriction was there, but the desire to restrict in the young boy wasn't there. So the older brother, trying to be kind to his younger brother, got him some sweets. And the mother was furious, because that type of mercy, kindness, which was in ignorance without knowledge, could have caused the greatest harm to the boy, could have killed him. And therefore the mother was so angry at the boy, even because she had told him not to give him anything to eat. So this verse says just that. Such a devotee who doesn't give a foolish person, encourage a foolish person, or instruct him how to engage in fruitive activities for material enjoyment, and like an experienced physician who never encourages a patient to eat food injurious to his health, even if the patient desires it. Prabhupada explains in his purport, in the last paragraph of the purport, a devotee may foolishly ask for material benedictions, but Lord Krishna does not give him such benedictions. So the demigods here are asking for the benediction of protection, and actually Krishna is going to give it to him, but in a way that purifies them. Because Krishna has a plan. He wants them to contrast their own self-interested behavior and attachment to their positions in their life with that of their enemy, Vritrasura, who is actually a great devotee. So they're going to see Vritrasura exhibit such incredible, detached, pure Krishna consciousness. But that will happen a little later. So Krishna has a plan. So a devotee may foolishly ask for material benedictions, but Lord Krishna does not give him such benedictions despite the devotee's prayers. Therefore, people who are very attached to material life do not generally become devotees of Krishna or Vishnu. Instead, they become devotees of the demigods. Kames tastaya ritagyana prapadyante anya devata. The benedictions of the demigods, however, are condemned in Bhagavad Gita. Antavatu phalam tesham tad bhavat yaupamedasham. Men of small intelligence worship the demigods, and their fruits are limited and temporary. A non-devotee, one who is not engaged in the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is considered a fool with a small quantity of brain substance. Prabhupada had such an amazing way of insulting people who were materialistic. One who is not, basically Prabhupada saying, anyone who is not a devotee engaged in the Lord's service is a fool and has no brain. Well, by definition, a fool is one who has no brain. It's a fool. Why? Why is Prabhupada so bold? Sometimes he just calls them rascals, fools and rascals. Rascals he liked to use, save sometimes for the scientists who were bluffing, saying that they knew but they didn't know. So why is he saying they're foolish, people who aren't devotees? Because they are putting all their energy, working so hard into something that is going to vanish so quickly in the force of time. Wasting the chance of life to gain something eternal. And using that chance, frittering it away, like having money and just burning it for the pleasure of burning it, rather than using it for some good. So life is like that. It should be used for something good, not building some sandcastles on the shore of the ocean as if it was serious work, but it's going to be completely destroyed in just a short time. So therefore a foolish person will do that. Small quantity of brain substance. So now Krishna is actually going to tell them how they can get their desires met, because they're actually servants of the Lord, and the circumstance that Krishna describes is going to purify them. He won't himself incarnate, though, as they're requesting. He says, O Maghavan Indra, all good fortune to you. I advise you to approach the exalted saint Dadyancha, who is also known as Dadichi. He has become very accomplished in knowledge, vows, and austerity, and his body is very strong. Go ask him for his body without delay. They're getting Indra and the demigods to ask the sage to donate to them his body. That means his life. Prabhupada's purport. Everyone in this material world, from Brahma down to the ant, is eager to keep his body comfortable. A pure devotee may also be comfortable, but he is not eager for such a benediction. Since Maghavan, the king of heaven, still aspired for a comfortable bodily situation, Lord Vishnu advised him to ask Dadyancha for his body, which was very strong due to his knowledge, vow, and austerity. So what an embarrassing situation for Indra, actually, even though it appears that he didn't feel embarrassed by this. But to protect his body and his situation, he's going to ask Dadyancha to give up his body. So if Dadyancha was interested in protecting his own situation as Indra was, he'd say no. But Dadyancha, being a sage, is going to say yes. And he's going to preach very powerfully. The Lord continues. That saintly Didansha, who is also known as Dadichi, personally assimilated the spiritual science and then delivered it to the Aswini Kumaras. It is said that the Didansha gave them mantras through the head of a horse. Therefore, the mantras are called Asvashira, which means literally horse head. After obtaining the mantras of spiritual science from Dadichi, the Aswini Kumaras became Jivan Muktas, liberated even in this life. So now the story of this in Prabhupada's purport will be told. The great sage Dadichi had perfect knowledge of how to perform fruitive activities. And he had advanced spiritual knowledge as well. Knowing this, the Aswini Kumaras once approached him and begged him to instruct them in spiritual science, Brahma Vidya. Now the Aswini Kumaras were the physicians amongst the demigods. They weren't quite on the level of demigods though. Just like Vaidyas or the physicians are not quite Brahmins. So the Aswini Kumaras physicians were not quite demigods. So they wanted Brahma Vidya, spiritual knowledge from the Dadichi Muni. The Dadichi Muni replied, I am now engaged in arranging sacrifices for fruitive activities. Come back sometime later. When the Aswini Kumaras left, Indra, the king of heaven, approached Dadichi and said, My dear Muni, the Aswini Kumaras are only physicians. Please do not instruct them in spiritual science. If you impart the spiritual science to them, in spite of my warning, I shall punish you by cutting off your head. After warning Dadichi in this way, Indra returned to heaven. The Aswini Kumaras, who understood Indra's desire, returned and begged Dadichi for Brahma Vidya. When the great sage Dadichi informed them of Indra's threat, the Aswini Kumaras replied, Let us first cut off your head and replace it with the head of a horse. Because they were physicians, they knew the art of organ transplant. You can instruct Brahma Vidya through the horse's head, and when Indra returns and cuts off that head, we shall reward you and restore your original head. Since the Dadichi had promised to impart Brahma Vidya to the Aswini Kumaras, he agreed to their proposal. Therefore, because the Dadichi imparted Brahma Vidya through the mouth of a horse, this Brahma Vidya is also known as Asvashira, which means, Asva means horse and Shira means head. So that's the story of how his Dadichi Muni and he had a very wonderful relationship with the Aswini Kumaras. So the Dadichi's invincible protective covering was known as the Narayan Kavacha. Covering known as the Narayan Kavacha was given to Tvasta, who delivered it to his son Vishwarup, from whom you have received it. Because of this Narayan Kavacha, the Dadichi's body is now very strong. You should therefore beg him for this body. When the Aswini Kumaras begged for the Dadichi's body on your behalf, he would surely give it because of affection. So the Aswini Kumaras and the Dadichi Muni had undergone this incredible pastime together where they had replaced his head. So he had so much affection for them, and also he had instructed them in spiritual knowledge, so they were his disciples. And he has naturally had an affection for them. So he will give it. Do not doubt this. For Dadyancha is very experienced in religious understanding. When Dadyancha awards you his body, Vishwakarma will take that body of the Dadichi Muni and prepare a thunderbolt from his bones. The thunderbolt is known as Vajra. This thunderbolt will certainly kill Vritrasura because it will be invested with my power. When Vritrasura is killed, because of my spiritual strength, the Lord says, you will regain your strength, weapons, and wealth. Thus there will be all good fortune for all of you. Although Vritrasura can destroy all the three worlds, do not fear that he will harm you. He is also a devotee and will never be envious of you. So the demigods must have been so amazed when they heard that. First they heard the amazing way that the Lord had planned to kill Vritrasura. And then they said, when the Lord said that Vritrasura won't actually harm them, they will kill him. But why won't he harm them is because he's actually a devotee and he has no envy in his heart. And which is basically the definition of a devotee. No envy in the heart. Because a devotee has cut out the root of envy from his heart. The root of envy is enviousness of the Lord. Because after all, if we're envious of something that someone else has, how much more so does the Lord have that same thing? We're envious of someone's beauty or wealth or fame or knowledge or renunciation or something. Strength. Who is the strongest? Who is the most renounced? Who is the most learned, the most beautiful? The most everything, the most of everything. That's the Lord. So if we have no enviousness of the Lord, no envy of the Lord, we have no envy of anyone. So that's what a devotee, because he surrendered to the Lord. And when he sees the good qualities of another, that someone excels him, he sees that Krishna has benedicted that person with a drop of his splendor. Here's Prabhupada's purport to that verse. A devotee of the Lord is never envious of anyone. What to speak of other devotees? As revealed later, Vritrasura was also a devotee. Therefore, he was not expected to be envious of the demigods. Indeed, of his own accord, he would try to benefit the demigods. A devotee does not hesitate to give up his own body for a better cause. Chanakya Pandit said, Sannimitte varam tyago vinashe niyate sati. After all one's material possessions, including his body, will be destroyed in due course of time. Therefore, if the body and other possessions can be utilized for a better cause, a devotee never hesitates to give up even his own body. Because Lord Vishnu wanted to save the demigods, Vritrasura, even though able to swallow the three worlds, would agree to be killed by the demigods. So we're going to see two examples of self-sacrifice. The Dityamuni and Vritrasura. For a devotee, there is no difference between living and dying, because in this life, a devotee engages in devotional service. And after giving up his body, he engages in the same service in the spiritual world. His devotional service is never hindered. So death does not stop a devotee from doing that which is most wonderful for him and desired by him, and that is serving. He's so conscious of who he is, and who is he? He's an eternal servant of Krishna. Therefore, he doesn't fear even the most fearful thing. And that is death. Because what he is doing in this life is service. What he will be doing in the next life, regardless of where it is, service. So for a devotee, whether he lives or dies, doesn't make any difference. He said that there was a saying, a Bengali saying about a deki. A deki is a... Do they have those in? It's just a machine that you... It's not a machine, really. It's just something you step on one end, yeah? And it crushes spices. And so there's a weight on one end. So it crushes. So a lady can be holding a baby or something, and with one foot she's pushing down this machine and the contraption, almost. And work is being done in that way. So whether it only has one function, you can't do anything else with this deki. It crushes things like that, threshing weed or something like that. What do they use it for? Spices or?
They mostly used to use it for making chip rice.
For rice, it's crushing rice.
Yeah, chip rice.
For flattening it, because
yeah.
It's a weight. Flattening the rice.
Also spices, but mostly they used to do that.
Yeah. So it only has one function. It can crush these kind of food grains. So whether, no matter where it is, it's going to do only this one thing. So whether a deki is in heaven or hell, it still does it crushes, makes flat rice or crushes spices or something like that. For a devotee, it's the same thing. Whether he's in heaven or hell, the spiritual world, the material world, he has one function. And that function is loving service, devotion, devotional service to Krishna. So in this regard, later on in the sixth canto of chapter 17, there's one verse, Narayana Parakshavi Natskatchana Vibhiti Swaga Pavagana Rakeshu Apitoyata Darshana. This verse, we'll get to this later, where it says the same thing. Wherever a devotee is, he is just going to serve. It doesn't make any difference to him, because if he's serving Krishna, he's ecstatic. Wherever he is externally, because he's with Krishna. And when he's not, if he's not serving Krishna, wherever he is, he's not happy, he's miserable. So he's always serving Krishna, and he's always with Krishna, so he's always ecstatic. So now we'll move on to chapter 10. So immediately, the Lord instructed Indra on how to get his needs met by going to the Dityamuni and begging his body. So after instructing Indra in this way, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, the cause of the cosmic manifestation, then and there disappeared from the presence of the onlooking demigods. O King Parikit, following the Lord's instructions, the demigods approached Adichie, the son of Atharva. He was very liberal, and when they begged him to give them his body, he at once partially agreed. However, just to hear religious instructions from them, he smilingly and jokingly spoke as follows. So in text 3 and 4 describes the words of the Ditchi. O elevated demigods, you're asking for my body. That means I have to die. At the time of death, severe, unbearable pain takes away the consciousness of all living entities who have accepted material bodies. Don't you know about this pain? In this material world, every living entity is very much addicted to his material body, struggling to keep his body forever. Everyone tries to protect it by all means, even at the sacrifice of all his possessions. Therefore, who would be prepared to deliver his body to anyone, even if it was demanded by Lord Vishnu? So he wanted to hear what they'd say in reply to this, because that's how they're feeling. The demigods replied. So there's two verses where they reply, and then he's going to answer. He's going to say some words on the principle, why he's doing it themselves. But here's what they say to convince him. O exalted Brahmana, pious persons like you, whose activities are praiseworthy, are very kind and affectionate to people in general. What can't such pious souls give for the benefit of others? They can give everything, including their bodies. Those who are too self-interested beg something from others, not knowing of others' pains. This is interesting. They're saying those who are, because he's saying, how could you ask me for this? It's going to cause me so much pain to give you this. How could you ask me to do something that's going to cause me so much pain? So their reply is, if those who are too self-interested beg something from others, not knowing of others' pains, that's their situation. They're so self-interested, they don't care about his pain. They want to take care of themselves. But if the beggar knew the difficulty of the giver, he would not ask for anything. So if the person who's doing the begging was considering how the position on the other side, he wouldn't ask him for anything. Similarly, he who's able to give charity does not know the beggar's difficulty. For otherwise, he would not refuse to give the beggar anything he might want as charity. Here's Prabhupada's purport. This verse describes two people, one who gives charity and one who begs for it. A beggar should not ask charity from a person who is in difficulty. Similarly, one who is able to give charity should not deny a beggar. These are the moral instructions of the Shastras. Chanakya Pandit says, San nimitte varam tyago vinashe niyate sati. Everything within this material world will be destroyed, and therefore one should use everything for good purposes. If one is advanced in knowledge, he must always be prepared to sacrifice anything for a better cause. At the present moment, the entire world is in a dangerous position under the spell of a godless civilization. The Krishna consciousness movement needs many exalted, learned persons who will sacrifice their lives to revive God consciousness throughout the world. We therefore invite all men and women advanced in knowledge to join the Krishna consciousness movement and sacrifice their lives for the great cause of reviving the God consciousness of human society. So there's a calling for Prabhupada to give sacrifice here. There's so many inconveniences that come when we are asked to give sacrifices. By definition, we're sacrificing something. We're giving up something that we could enjoy ourselves. That's what sacrifice means. But without sacrifice, one can't be happy. And it is not noble to live without sacrifice. So the noblest persons will sacrifice everything for the greatest of causes. Well, Prabhupada here is inviting, he's noting what the greatest of causes is, and that's to revive someone's Krishna consciousness, to help people awaken their actual, natural, pure consciousness and go back to Godhead. To help others will also help oneself, but it takes great sacrifice. It takes that type of 100% commitment, conviction and commitment. So if one doesn't have that kind of commitment, that doesn't mean that one shouldn't sacrifice anything. One should sacrifice, possibly push oneself a little bit more than one has the capacity, but one should always sacrifice. We should sacrifice, if we have 20% ability to sacrifice, we should sacrifice 20 plus a little bit of pushing. But not too much, otherwise we'll end up springing back and being angry. Why did I give so much? Why did I give so much? And then going back to giving nothing, unless we're very strong and fixed in our will and determination based on Krishna conscious advancement and knowledge. So we should, with guidance, we should get some training and then be situated at some level or another of sacrificing for the pleasure of Krishna. And if we are able, with guidance and with superior sanction, because when one's young, one has an idealistic, romantic heart and thinks, yes, I want to do this, but one doesn't know how difficult the path is going to be. We don't mind sacrificing long as the path we're walking on is decorated with flower petals and at least foam, so it's soft. But if it's rocks and razor blades, we want to get off the path. Or at least get some thick shoes. So sometimes the path is very heavy. Cunning. But if we have the strength and the Krishna conscious determination and conviction, will and sacrifice everything, and Krishna will care for us fully and will get the greatest reward. But if one doesn't have that, it's foolish to start walking on the path and then start grumbling and griping and complaining and then start criticizing everyone else on the path because you don't want to be on that. It's too hard for you, you know, that much sacrifice and that much surrender. So one really needs to know, with sanction, with guidance, what is the proper position for me? And then one should act according to that. proper prescription, individual prescription. But yet, everyone should sacrifice something according to their capacity for the pleasure of Krishna. That should be the mood. And everyone should be humble and not think their sacrifice is great, great. You should see that we're all limited to one degree or another. But everyone should sacrifice, that's the point. Please accept this for your pleasure. Now in the next four verses, 7 through 10, the Dichi will speak again. Now he'll speak on religious principles, and his realizations are very heavy. And not only are his realizations heavy, but he acts upon them. He is going to sacrifice his body. And the great sage Kadishi said, "Just to hear from you about religious principles, I refuse to offer my body at your request. Now, although my body is extremely dear to me, I must give it up for your better purposes, since I know that it will leave me today or tomorrow. O demigods, one who has no compassion for humanity in its suffering and does not sacrifice his impermanent body for the higher causes of religious principles or eternal glory is certainly pitied even by immovable beings." So he's saying this is everyone's duty to sacrifice to alleviate the sufferings of others. How could we look in the world and see how much suffering is there and just be compact and self-satisfied, not looking at anyone else, but just be happy in our own little compact, compartmentalized world? No, we must do something for others. If someone doesn't sacrifice his body, his life for others, you'll be pitied. It's a horrendous position. This greedy type of position, selfish, miserly position. Even by immovable beings who themselves are in a pitiable condition, they pity people like that because the results will be so bad. So here's Prabhupada's purport. In this regard, a very exalted example was set by Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the six Goswamis of Vrindavan. Concerning Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, it is said in the Srimad Bhagavatam, "Chakvas sudishtyaja sure shitaraja lakshmim tamishtaya vachasaya ragadaranyam mayamrigam daita yep sitaman vahavad Vande Maha Purushate Saranaravindam." We offer our respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of the Lord, upon whom one should always meditate. He left his household the life, leaving aside his eternal consort, whom even the denizens of heaven adore. He went into the forest to deliver the fallen souls who were put into illusion by material energy. To accept sannyas means to commit civil suicide, but sannyas is compulsory, at least for every brahmana, every first-class human being. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had a very young and beautiful wife and a very affectionate mother. Indeed, the affectionate dealings of his family members were so pleasing that even the demigods could not expect such happiness at home. Nevertheless, for the deliverance of all fallen souls of the world, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took sannyas and left home when he was only 24 years old. He lived a very strict life as a sannyasi, refusing all bodily comforts. Similarly, his disciples, the six Goswamis, were ministers who held exalted positions in society, but they also left everything to join the movement of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Srinivasa Charja says, "Takfatona mashe shamandalapati shrenim saratu shavan budvadina ganesha ko karunaya kopina kanta srito." These Goswamis left their very comfortable lives as ministers, jamindars, and learned scholars, and join Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement just to show mercy to the fallen souls of the world. Dina Ganesha Ko Karunaya. Accepting very humbled lives as mendicants, wearing no more than loincloths and torn quilts, Kopina Kanta, they lived in Vrindavan and followed Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's order to excavate Vrindavan's lost glories. Similarly, everyone else with a materially comfortable condition in this world should join the Krishna consciousness movement to elevate the fallen soul. So this is Prabhupada's call and his order. The word Bhuttadayaya Mayam Rigam Daita Yep Sitam and Dina Ganeshako Kurunaya all convey the same sense. They are very significant words for those interested in elevating human society to a proper understanding of life. One should join the Krishna consciousness movement following the examples of such great personalities as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the six Goswamis, and before them the great sage Didichi. Instead of wasting one's life for temporary bodily comforts, one should always be prepared to give up one's life for better causes. After all, the body will be destroyed. Therefore, one should sacrifice it for the glory of distributing religious principles throughout the world. Powerful purport. Dadichi continues. If one is unhappy to see the distress of other living beings and happy to see their happiness, his religious principles are appreciated as imperishable by exalted persons who are considered pious and benevolent. Prabhupada's purport. One generally follows different types of religious principles or performs various occupational duties according to the body given to him by the modes of material nature. In this verse, however, real religious principles are explained. Everyone should be unhappy to see others in distress and happy to see others happy. Atmavat savabhuteshu. One should feel the happiness and distress of others as his own. It is on this basis that the Buddhist religious principle of nonviolence, Ahimsa Parama Dharma, is established. We feel pain when someone disturbs us, and therefore we should not inflict pain upon other living beings. Lord Buddha's mission was to stop unnecessary animal killing, and therefore he preached that the greatest religious principle is nonviolence. One cannot continue killing animals and at the same time be a religious man. That is the greatest hypocrisy. Jesus Christ said, "Do not kill," but hypocrites nevertheless maintain thousands of slaughterhouses while posing as Christians. Such hypocrisy is condemned in this verse. One should be happy to see others happy, and one should be unhappy to see others unhappy. This is the principle to be followed. Unfortunately, at the present moment, so-called philanthropists and humanitarians advocate the happiness of humanity at the cost of the lives of poor animals. That is not recommended herein. This verse clearly says that one should be compassionate to all living entities, regardless of whether human, animal, tree, or plant. All living entities are sons of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna. Says in Bhagavad Gita, Sava Yoni Shikantaya Sambhavat Mutya Sambhavativa Ya Tasham Brahma Mahadyoniraham Bijapada Pita. It should be understood that all species of life, O Son of Kunti, are made possible by birth in this material nature, and that I am the seed giving father. The different forms of these living entities are only their external dresses. Every living being is actually a spirit soul, a part and parcel of God. Therefore, one should not favor only one kind of living being. A Vaishnava sees all living being entities as part and parcel of God. As the Lord says in Bhagavad Gita, Vidyavanaya sampane brahmani gavi hastini shuni chaiva svapakecha pandita samadarshana. The humble sage, by virtue of true knowledge, sees with equal vision a learned and gentle brahmana, cow, an elephant, a dog, and a dog-eater. Brahma-bhuta prasanatma na sochati na kanchati samasaveshu bhuteshu madbhaktim labhate param. One who is transcendentally situated at once realizes the Supreme Brahman and becomes fully joyful. He never laments nor desires to have anything. He is equally disposed to every living entity. In that state he attains pure devotional service unto me. A Vaishnava therefore is truly a perfect person because he laments to see others unhappy and feels joy at seeing others happy. A Vaishnava is paradukha-dukhi. He is always unhappy to see the conditioned souls in an unhappy state of materialism. Therefore, a Vaishnava is always busy preaching Krishna consciousness throughout the world. So he's explaining, the teacher is explaining what religious principles actually are, because he's asked them, he wanted the demigods to speak on religious principles, and now he's speaking that religious principles mean to sacrifice one's own happiness for the happiness of others. Not that one should think only of one's happiness and kill animals, causing them unlimited pain just because one likes the taste of meat. It brings one happiness, some kind of happiness. And has slaughterhouses. How cruel. So religious principle means doing good for others, even at the cost of one's own conveniences. Or even at the cost of one's own life. As we see in the incredible example of Lord Jesus. More, here's the teacher's last speaking on religious principles. This body, which is eatable by jackals and dogs after death, does not actually do any good for me, the spirit soul. It is usable only for a short time and may perish at any moment. The body and its possessions, its riches and relatives, must all be engaged for the benefit of others, or else they will be sources of tribulation and misery. This similar advice is also given in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Sanskrit verse from the 10th canto. It is the duty of every living being to perform welfare activities for the benefit of others with his life, wealth, intelligence, and words. This is the mission of life. One's own body and the bodies of his friends and relatives, as well as one's own riches and everything that one may have, everything else one has, should be engaged for the benefit of others. This is the mission of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. As stated in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Bharata Bhumite Hoila Manusha Janmayar Janmasataka Kari Kara Parupakar. One who has taken birth as a human being in the land of India, Bharatvarsh, should make his life successful and work for the benefit of all other people. The word upakuryat means parupakar, helping others. Of course, in human society, there are many institutions to help others, but because philanthropists do not know how to help others, their propensity for philanthropy is ineffectual. They do not know the ultimate goal of life, shreya acharanam, which is to please the Supreme Lord. If all philanthropic and humanitarian activities were directed towards achieving the ultimate goal of life, to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they would all be perfect. Humanitarian work without Krishna is nothing. Krishna must be brought to the center of all our activities, otherwise no activity will have value. So that's the end of Prabhupada's purports and on the words of the Dichi Muni. Now the pastime continues. Sri Sukadeva Goswami said, the Dichi Muni, the son of Atharva, thus resolved to give up his body to the service of the demigods. He placed himself, the spirit soul, at the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and in this way gave up his gross material body made of five elements. The Dichi Muni controlled his senses, life force, mind, and intelligence, and became absorbed in trance. Thus he cut all his material bonds. He could not perceive how his material body became separated from his self. Read Prabhupada's purport to this verse. Antakale, the Lord says in Bhagavad Gita 8.8.5, Antakale chamameva smanan muktva kalevaram ya prayati samad bhavam Yati nasti atra samsaya. Whoever at the time of death quits his body remembering me alone, at once attains my nature. Of this there is no doubt. So the Didrikshi Muni did this. Of course, one must practice before one is overcome by death. But the perfect yogi, namely the devotee, dies in trance, thinking of Krishna. He does not feel his material body being separated from his soul. The soul is immediately transferred to the spiritual world. Chakva deham puna janma naiti mameti. The soul does not enter the womb of a material mother again, but is transferred back to home, back to Godhead. This yoga, bhakti yoga, is the highest yoga system as explained by the Lord Himself in Bhagavad Gita. Yogi namapi sarve sham madgate nantaratmaram sharavan bhajate yomam same yuktat tamo mataha. Of all yogis, he always abides in me with great faith, worshipping me in transcendental loving service, is most intimately united with me in yoga, and is the highest of all. Bhakti yogi always thinks of Krishna, and therefore at the time of death, he can very easily transfer himself to Krishna Loka without even perceiving the pains of death. Thereafter, King Indra very firmly took up the thunderbolt manufactured by Vishwakarma from the bones of Dadichi. Charged with the exalted power of the Didrikshi Muni and enlightened by the power of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Indra rode on the back of his carrier Aravata, surrounded by all the demigods, while all the great sages offered him praise. Thus he shone very beautifully, pleasing the three worlds as he rode off to kill Vritrasura. My dear King Parikit, as Rudra, being very angry at Antaka Yamaraj, had formerly run towards Antaka to kill him, Indra angrily and with great force attacked Vritrasura, who was surrounded by the leaders of the demoniac armies. Therefore, thereafter, at the end of Satyayuga and the beginning of Treta Yuga, fierce battle took place between the demigods and the demons on the bank of the Narmada. O king, when all the Asuras came onto the battlefield, headed by Vritrasura, they saw King Indra carrying the thunderbolt and surrounded by the Rudras, Vasus, Adityas, Aswini Kumaras, Pitas, Vanis, Maruts, Ribus, Sadyas, and Vishadevs. Surrounded by his company, Indra shone so brightly that his effulgence was intolerable to the demons. He was so powerful now. Many hundreds and thousands of demons, demi-demons, yakshas, rakshashas, and others headed by Sumali and Mali, resisted the armies of King Indra, which even death personified cannot easily overcome. Among the demons were Namuchi, Sambara, Anarva, Dvimurda, Rishabha, Asura, Hayagriva, Sankusira, Viprachitti, Ayomuka, Puloma, Vrishaparva, Praheti, Heti, and Utkala. Roaring tumultuously and fearlessly like lions, these invincible demons, all dressed in golden ornaments, gave pain to the demigods with weapons like clubs, bludgeons, arrows, barbed darts, mallets, and lances. Armed with lances, tridents, axes, swords, and other weapons like shaktagnis and bisundis, I'm not sure what they are, but I'm sure they gave trouble to the opposing side. The demons attacked from different directions and scattered all the chiefs of the demigod armies. As the stars in the sky cannot be seen when covered by dense clouds, the demigods, being completely covered by networks of arrows falling upon them one after another, could not be seen. So it seemed like the demons are winning. The shower of various weapons and arrows released to kill the soldiers of the demigods did not reach them, because the demigods, acting quickly, cut the weapons into thousands of pieces in the sky, so they used their own weapons to stop the weapons of the demons. As their weapons and mantras decreased, the demons began showering mountain peaks, trees, and stones upon the demigod soldiers. But the demigods were so powerful and expert that they nullified all these weapons by breaking them to pieces in the sky as before. When the soldiers of the demons, commanded by Vritrasura, saw that the soldiers of King Indra were quite well, having not been injured at all by their volleys of weapons, not even by the trees, stones, and mountain peaks, the demons became very much afraid. When insignificant persons use rough words to cast false, angry accusations against saintly persons, their fruitless words do not disturb the great personalities. Similarly, all the efforts of the demons against the demigods, who were favorably situated under the protection of Krishna, were futile. They were Krishna Anukuleshu. They were protected by Krishna. Prabhupada's short purport. There's a Bengali saying that if a vulture curses a cow to die, the curse will not be effective. Similarly, you know that one? You know it in Bengali? Okay. Similarly, accusations made by demonic persons against devotees of Krishna cannot have any effect. The demigods are devotees of Lord Krishna, and therefore the curses of the demons were futile. 29. The asuras, who were never devotees of Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, lost their pride in fighting when they found all their endeavors futile. Leaving aside their leaders, even in the very beginning of the fight, they decided to flee because all their prowess had been taken away by the enemy. Seeing his army broken, and all the asuras, even those known as great heroes, fleeing the battlefield out of intense fear, Vritrasura, who was truly a great-minded hero, smiled and spoke the following words. So there's three verses here of Vritrasura's words. According to his position, and at the time, and the time and circumstances, Vritrasura, the hero amongst heroes, spoke words that were much to be appreciated by thoughtful men. He called to the heroes of the demons, O Viprachitti, O Namuchi, O Palomo, Maya, Anarva, and Sambara, please hear me and do not flee. All living entities who have taken birth in this material world must die. Surely, no one in this world has found any means to be saved from death. Even Providence has not provided a means to escape it. Under the circumstances, death being inevitable, if one can gain promotion to the higher planetary systems and be always celebrated here by dying a suitable death, what man will not accept such a glorious death? I'll read the final verses spoken and read that. There's a short purport by Prabhupada to that verse. There are two ways to meet a glorious death, and both are very rare. One is to die after performing mystic yoga, especially bhakti yoga, by which one can control the mind and living force and die absorbed in thought of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as the Diti Muni did. The second is to die on the battlefield, leading the army and never showing one's back. These two kinds of death are recommended in the Shastras as glorious. In Prabhupada's purport to 32. If by dying one can be elevated to the higher planetary systems and be ever famous after his death, who is so foolish that he will refuse such a glorious death? Similar advice was also given by Krishna to Arjuna. My dear Arjuna, the Lord said, do not desist from fighting. If you gain victory in the fight, you will enjoy a kingdom. And even if you die, you will be elevated to the heavenly planets. Everyone should be ready to die while performing glorious deeds. A glorious person is not meant to meet death like cats and dogs. So this is character. People who have principles and live by those principles are called people, persons with integrity and character. So we have to develop this, especially in a devotional way, as servants of Guru Krishna. Okay, thank you very much. Shiva Bhagavatam ki jai, Shri Prabhupada ki jai. So tomorrow we will hear, if Krishna allows, we will hear more of the qualities of Vritrasura in the chapter 11, the transcendental qualities of Vritrasura. Important chapter.